Yes.
Well, you represent a very strong point of view, which I hear from half of the people who talk to me about my book. That is, half of the people who talk to me about the people's history say, I feel depressed. And the other half say, well, I'm glad you told me about all the people who have fought back, about the movements and the struggles and people we never heard of. Now, maybe it's not 50-50. I would like to think it's 50-50. Maybe it's 70-30, and I'm fooling myself about what I did. It's a tough balance to strike, that is, to be truthful about the terrible things that have happened and the number of times that strikers have been mowed down by the police and that strikes have been lost, to strike a balance between that and the magnificent resistance of people and people coming back and back and back. The IWW was destroyed by the government in the course of World War I, and their leaders were put on trial, and they were given long sentences, and they took this magnificent organization and just eliminated it. And yet, in its time, in its short life, it did remarkable and inspiring things. It fought for people's rights. It organized workers. It won the textile strike in Lowell in 1912 against the power of the textile companies. It defended the rights of free speech of IWW of speakers, labor organizers who went around in towns and were arrested. And then IWW people would gather from other states and they would come into those towns and they would speak and they would get arrested. And they would do it again and again and again until the jails were full and overbursting. And until they had to be released from jail. But there's both things are true. That is, that we can read American history in such a way as to depress us and this is the complaint very often of it's not the complaint of my friends and not your complaint, but very often the complaint of traditionalists who say, you know, you're telling bad things about the United States. Why don't you tell the good things? But I think it's a real challenge to be honest about the power of the establishment, but at the same time to tell those stories which have been left out of the history books. You take something, and then and how you look at an event can be looked upon in those two different ways. If you read the history of the civil rights movement, and you come to that part of the civil rights movement in which a part that's not as well known, let's say, as Selma, Alabama, or the Montgomery bus boycott, or the big marches in Birmingham. You come to the movement in Albany, Georgia, in 1961-62, a small town, almost a town that seemed like it was still in slavery, in cotton and peanut country in southwest Georgia. But in 1961, the black population of Albany, Georgia, rose up as it hadn't done. And in anybody's memory, it rose up and rebelled against racial segregation in the city of Albany. And before you knew it, 700 people were in jail. 1,000 people were in jail. A good part of the black population of Albany, Georgia. But they came out of jail and they went back in the demonstrations and the picket lines and the sit-ins. And they were beaten. And a woman who was in jail and pregnant and beaten, lost her child, and all sorts of things happen in Albany. And the history of that very often is written as the history is of one of the defeats of the civil rights movement, because when that movement stopped in Albany, Georgia, it seemed that nothing had changed. There's nothing. They couldn't point to anything specific that had been accomplished, and yet all these people had gone to jail, and a number of people had been hurt badly. I never read it that way. And some of the people who participated in that movement didn't read it that way. And a black man named Charles Sherrod, who went down to Albany at that time, who worked with SNCC and the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, and who after everybody left, well, that is after people who had gone down there to participate in the movement had left, he stayed and has stayed there all through these years. And he writes about that time, and he says, I don't know why you call Albany, Georgia, defeat. Because after Albany, defeat or not, people were never the same. Black people were never the same. White people were never the same. And he pointed to all the ways in which Albany, Georgia was different. And, well, you know how it is. You can look at the situation of racism in the United States today, and you can be in despair, and there people say, oh, the situation is worse than it ever was, things have gone backward, or the women's movement and sexual equality and things. It's possible. There's enough evidence. This is a great thing about history, right? There's always enough evidence on all sides to paint whatever picture you want, you see. And then you can paint a picture which puts people in despair, or you can, without inventing anything, you can find those episodes and then those moments in history which suggest to you that something else is possible, even if that something else has not yet taken place on a big enough scale. You know, I think of Albany, Georgia. When I think of Albany, Georgia, I think of these hundreds and hundreds of black people lined up in front of the desk of the chief of police of Albany, Georgia, to be booked. You know, their names, addresses, and at one point the chief looks over the top of his desk and there's somebody there and he can just barely see the top of his head, and it was a 9-year-old kid being arrested. And the chief said, "Boy, what's your name?" And the little boy replied, "Freedom, freedom." Those are the kinds of things that happen 1,000 times in different ways in every social movement in this country, that the spirit that people have and which, no matter what they do, cannot really be extinguished. So I think it's possible to teach kids about people like that. I think it's possible to teach kids about other kids. I think it's possible to teach them about the kids who in the early part, 1903, traveled to Washington, D.C. Kids who worked in the mines were gathered up and organized by Mother Jones, who took them to Washington, D.C. to ask Congress to do something about child labor in the mines and elsewhere. And the kids marched around in front of the White House. Theodore Roosevelt was president. Sorry to mention his name. But the kids marched around carrying signs saying, "We want time to play." I think there are lots of really wonderful and inspiring stories to tell kids about people who have fought back against terrible things in this country.